This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Well, a very happy new year, a happy 2019 to all of our lovely listeners to the Chelsea Fancast. Obviously, we've had a bit of a break while the Christmas and New Year celebrations have been going on. But the weekend before New Year, we met up with our mates on the London is Blue podcast, who were over for their annual pilgrimage to West London to see the mighty Blues. And in the process, we met up with them at the Classic Football Shirts shop, which is in the East End, very near Brick Lane, to have a good old chat, a bit of a live podcast. There were some great people who were very good enough to come along. Many of them were on the trip that the boys organise, as well as some people who listened to both shows who wandered along to have a beer, all free, courtesy of the lovely Classic Football Shirts people. Anyway, in the process, we all sat around a big table, had a good chat, not really about the current football, actually. It was more to do with the history of Chelsea's shirts, which is a very interesting subject for most people. And, of course, all of the kind of stuff about what the differences are between being a supporter who supports Chelsea in the States compared to us lot, who, of course, are very lucky that we can go pretty much to every match. So, fantastic evening had by all. Great to see the boys, as always. Apologies to our listeners who have already jumped on their platforms and listened to this already. But there you go. You know, I insisted on having it on our platform too. And, of course, I'm lazy, so mine came out later than theirs. But there you go. Anyway, this is part two of the live podcast that we did in Classic Football Shirts in the East End with the London is Blue boys. And on this part, we concentrate on the supporter relationship, particularly the differences between being a supporter in the USA and, of course, the supporters in the UK. Have a listen to this. It's Nick Villani, Brandon Busby and Dan Dormer and Mike from the London is Blue podcast, joined by myself, Stamford Chidge, the lovely Jonathan Kidd, Dan Silver and Clayton Beerman. Enjoy.
For the second part, we're just going to do pretty much a hard shift, being honest, and move into more about the state of the supporters a little bit, or kind of like us, you know, intermingling amongst each other is people from all over the world coming to support Chelsea, and kind of how we can lean on you guys for help when we bring a bunch of new fans to the bridge, and what we can do to help. And also, you know, from your guys' standpoint, you have a lot of hardships that we probably take for granted or blind to. Just like we have some hardships that, you know, you guys aren't interested in because it doesn't affect you either. So just kind of kicking it off, going to drop it off to American Dan here, starting it and just kind of, you know, open it up on your side.
You know, you should call him Lieutenant Dan.
It's too much authority.
Yeah, it needs to be like Private Dan, like Sub-Private Dan.
Yeah, with great power comes great responsibility.
That would make, our Dan Forrest Gump, though.
Stupid does.
Yeah, box of chocolate.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, life is like a...
I'm sorry, Rich? Okay, in. Anyways, I'm just going to talk about the international fan side of it. You have now moved from East Coast to West Coast.
Yeah.
Which means 4:30 a.m., 5 a.m., 5:30 a.m. kickoff times to you silly, crazy people over there.
Mike told me it was going to be like that. I didn't believe him. And then I got there, and they were awful. They are awful.
Yeah, time zones are real, Dan.
But here's the thing. Like, waking up at 4 a.m. or 3 a.m. or whatever it is to get ready for whatever match that is, I think pales sometimes in the significance of the commuting responsibility of the fan who is traveling to some of these away matches, which is can involve multiple line transfers, train changes. We've seen some of the stuff. How many times has our friend Dan Levine tweet out the closures, and you're like, wow, this is going to be a really interesting commuting experience for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, if we get up to Sunderland or Newcastle at 12 o'clock on Saturday, we're up at similar times anyway to get the train or the club coach. So, it's the sacrifices you make for your club, whether you're in the UK or in America, wherever you are, you make the sacrifices.
It's distinguishing between the fact that a lot of the challenges are similar, but we just feel them in different ways. The time is similar. You guys might be able to go to that Wednesday night or Thursday night match. Yeah. Thursday night matches this season. Where we're doing that midday and trying to figure out our work schedule around it. And, you might have to go travel to this away match that we basically can wake up in bed and, throw it up on the TV and be good to go.
But, Dan, Lieutenant Dan, I lost all sympathy, and I don't take this the wrong way, my American friends, but I lost all sympathy for you when one of my great American Chelsea friends, he lives in L.A., and I phoned him up and I said, so you going to the Fox and Hounds to watch the football? And he said, Chidge, What do you think I'm going to do? I said, well, you're going to go to the pub at 7 in the morning and have a pint or two and watch. He said, mate, I'm going to be in bed with my supermodel girlfriend watching it on a 60-inch plasma screen that's at the end of the bed. Why would I go to the pub? And at that moment, I just thought, yeah, I get that. But there was no hardship. Well, in some respects, you could possibly say there was. But generally, there was no hardship involved with his decision whatsoever.
I guess also a lot of it's down to where you are in the country. Because my friend Dennis, who's over from Toronto, he lives an hour from the nearest Chelsea pub.
So exactly. And that's the other thing, isn't it? Like Beth in Texas, they're miles away. But I think, there's so much rubbish talked about this issue. And the reality is that whatever hardship we go through by, having to get up at 6 in the morning to go on a match to Sunderland or Newcastle or whatever, which kicks off at 12 o'clock, we get to be there. We get to be at the game, enjoying that day out with our friends, having a beer in the pub before and afterwards, sucking up the atmosphere and absolutely enjoying it and feeling stupidly, possibly naively at best, that we're affecting the outcome. But we get to be there. You guys don't. And that's shit. For that's the reality.
But there's no naivety there, because when I watch a game on telly, it's horrendous.
Oh, it's awful. I hate it. Yeah, I hate
when
it.
I'm there, it's different. Yeah. It's horrendous in a different way.
Yeah.
But you basically, if you are physically in the stadium, you believe that you can influence it in some way, which is absolute rubbish, because of course you can't.
No. But you feel that you can.
But you feel that you can. When I watch it on telly, it's horrendous.
You feel part of it, don't you?
I sympathise with you guys so much, because watching it on telly is just...
Is it because you can't see the full pitch?
To me,
that's the biggest thing. We're here at the Bridge.
It's also the choices made by the director as well.
If you see the game live, at the same time, you don't get benefits. So on and so forth. So
you see the whole game, don't you?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I just think it's a complete... It's just a mind thing that you actually think that if you are
there is that.
You do have some control.
I have never had that feeling ever at a football game.
You're too busy to posh.
Ever. I always think,
it's going off in some way. If I just...
But that's because you get your butler to watch for you.
Yeah, that's true.
He closes his eyes and he describes
it. The last goal he saw live was Kerry Dixon's last goal for Chelsea, wasn't it?
But there's another thing too, which I think that we over here forget, and we should remember as well, is that when we go, and let's say, well, actually, it doesn't matter if it's shit, we go, it's crap, we lose, but we get to drink with our friends afterwards and we soon forget about how shit it was. If we were brilliant and we win, we get to go out with our friends who were at the game in the pub afterwards and celebrate it. So it's a communal thing. We're not doing it in isolation. Mm. We're there with our friends, whether it's good or bad, and that's great.
Because the whole thing when the club sent out lots of gifts to the American fans was a huge uproar on Twitter.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was like, well, quite frankly, being able positioned to go to games week in, week out, to me is worth more than any signed shirt.
Well, no. I was going to give you the pint glasses in exchange. Yeah. I thought we had agreed in.
Yeah, but not in public.
It's non-binding.
Yeah,
it's
non-binding. Yeah. Fine. Yeah. Hey, Brandon, I want to jump in because, you know, Raymond and I, we used to live in Seattle. There's a great supporters group there. Probably, you know, 50 people for games, sometimes 200 to 300 people there. And when we moved about 40 miles south to Tacoma, we started a supporters group because, to me, football is community.
Yeah,
you know, I think we see the toxicity in social media because there are a lot of people who are at home by themselves watching stuff, freaking out because it's about your mates. It's about sharing some beers. It's about that community. It's about community. Yeah. So we're not traveling to games, but Raymond and I mean, we started Rainier Blues 2 years ago, and we're at a pub. At 4 a.m., you know, we have people
just
who
the
will
two
be,
of you.
You know, some
all
of our 4:30 a.m. games.
All you need is two people for
listen,
a group.
Listen, we have at least 10 people at some of the 4:30 games.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
The whole thing, like, look up, you know, Chidge and I and the whole group we drink with at the Cock, there's just such a huge cross-section of people from different backgrounds, different whatever it is. It's just a great family who come together for Chelsea.
I mean, last home match, the Leicester match, was a really good case in point. I mean, I know it was the match before Christmas, so, you know, a few more people came out, but we were pretty pissed off because we'd lost and, you know, we hadn't played very well. But genuinely, after about two or three pints, nobody was even talking about the football anymore. Yeah. You know, the whole thing had disappeared and we were just having a great evening.
And I think that speaks to what we did after Spurs last year.
Right? Yeah.
Well, that
was in the Atlas, exactly.
We drank 6 hours commiserating.
And Nick went shrieking. It was so weird.
Yeah.
Not the first one.
But, like, we saw each other before and, you know, we were kind of, I think everyone was kind of nervous for that one. We all kind of had a little anxiety.
Flippy other way around. I was in Chicago and I met with the Chicago people at their pub and it was felt just as much as part of the family there as I did coming here because they really get it. They know the songs. You know, Brian, you know, he knows everything. He really organises the pub and it's really great. So from, you know, English guy going to America to watch a match, it was fantastic.
Sure.
It was, you know, really, really thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that community after Spurs, right? Worst loss, you know,
30
years. In a long time for you guys and certainly for us. We then just drank it away on Easter Sunday for as long as we could until there was a Subway with some vegetables left that we had late night.
There is one slight difference though, and it almost sounds a bit churlish to say this, and I don't mean it like that, but when you go to a home match, particularly, it's like you are going to church, you're going to your cathedral to commune with what's going on the pitch, but also with the people that you are communing with. And the difference between that, and I suspect, and I've watched, you know, games in pubs in the States with American supporters and had a great time. But it's the difference is, you know, one is you're going to the cathedral and the other is you're watching Jimmy Swagger on TV. And that is the difference. And there's no getting away from that, which is why when you guys come over here and you get to experience what we are, I mean, don't underestimate this. We get how lucky and privileged we are. We get to do it every week. But you get it when you come over here, and I think you really resonate with that, and you go, yeah, that's what it's about.
It's a pilgrimage.
It is. And we get that you get that. You know, that's why we like you guys.
I think Adam Harrits, who's, I think, on the New York Blues, and I got my tickets first ever Chelsea match and sat next to me. You just see him, like, walk into the stadium the first time and just like seeing this, you know, guy in his early 30s face as he walks into Stamford Bridge for the first time.
We were just talking about that.
Like, the moment that
just walking the shed wall today.
Incredible moment when people see that, you know, because, you know, I've done it a thousand times, but to see this guy, A, so grateful for the ticket, B, just the experience and how much he loved it. That kind of it's the kind of family you choose, because we're all together for the same thing. You know, we all support Chelsea, and you know, to see helping people to facilitate getting tickets is amazing.
I think Dan's a great point, because I've been going for a few weeks, and
bloody Johnny
really got into this late in life.
And basically, I just turn up because that's what I do.
Yeah.
Because I've had a season ticket forever, and I go and I see my mates, and that's what I do. Yeah. That's part of my life. And you do forget how special it is. I mean, every now and again, something will happen, and you'll think, this is why
I do it. Well, the City game, for example, this year.
Why am I here?
I think that a lot about my life. But no, it is. We take it for granted because we do it so often, and because it's not, you know, it's not a big ask. You know, for me, it's 45 minutes on a tube and I'm there. But it's
a question for you then: is why do you see the toxicity forming and I think growing at times between match-going supporters and "quote unquote" fans?
Because people need to get a life. Why does it matter?
I can expand on that.
Well, you're
right. I mean, basically,
it doesn't. I don't care. People don't go.
But Clayton, before any of these lovely people turned up, you know, you'd get the brigade would say, "Well, you weren't born in Battersea or Chelsea, so you can't be a Chelsea fan." So, you know, you get to these ridiculous details and degrees of what makes you a Chelsea fan and what doesn't. And it's basically envy and a fear of lack of ownership. You know, you are no longer special if other people can do what you do. And I think that goes to a heart of it. And I think, you know, most of it, as with a lot of these problems, all really boils down to envy and being a bit too precious.
Completely. And I, because I'm this sort of person, I don't get that.
No, I really don't get that.
You think that... Yeah, most of you guys will come over maybe one or two matches, then you'll get back on the plane and you may not come back for another year. Whereas you and I will be going week after week. So I have no issue with it. And it's...
Well, there's something else too, Dan. I mean, you know, your dad was a Chelsea fan?
Yeah, my granddad.
Your granddad was?
We're approaching...
So how many generations?
Well, it's be 100 years in 2020.
Yeah. Well, we've only been... So pretty much from the beginning. Yeah. Jonathan?
Wow.
Jonathan?
My father used to go in the 30s.
Yeah. But what about his dad?
No.
So you're only second generation.
He was Belfast. Yeah.
Okay.
Linfield, he supported. They were blue and white brothers.
We shouldn't say that. Clayton?
No. I mean, my dad wasn't a big football fan, but my dad took me because I was so passionate about it. He was that? No, that was my uncle.
Right. We can edit that out.
That was my uncle.
Okay. Yeah.
But
read my book.
So you're first generation, Chelsea.
Yeah.
As am I.
Yeah, you know, and I'm taking my son now, which is great. Yeah. And as I explained to you,
you should quickly tell the story that you were telling before we recorded the podcast about your son.
Yeah, no, I was so proud of my son today, because most people, you know, they're proud because they get great grades at school or they do this or do that. I came home. My son came home and Spurs were winning 1-0, and he looked to the TV and he shook his head and went, "Oh God!" And then Wolves equalised. And he was, "Yes." And then Wolves went 2-1 up, and he went, "Yes." And then Wolves 3, he went, "Yes."
Shirt off, running around.
And when
they
went back to Wembley, he said, "Is it 4-1? And it wasn't, but it was a moment that made me so proud.
But the point that I was making, I mean, Dan's family have been, you know, Chelsea going back generations. Jonathan too, Clayton and myself are very similar. My dad was a Portsmouth fan. He took me there when I was 7 to Fratton Park, and I almost said, "I don't want you to be my father anymore." Because even at the age of 7, I realised that it was absolute shit. And it was very violent, too, and it frightened the hell out of me. But he then took me to Stamford Bridge in 76. Oddly, not to see Chelsea. It was an FA Cup semi-final, but I fell in love with the ground, and that was it. So the bottom line is, it doesn't matter how you found it, or when or how, but there will always be people that will say, "Well, I'm more Chelsea than you." I mean, just round this table, Dan is more Chelsea than me, Jonathan and Clayton. Yeah. Right? So what I'm saying is, it's about respect. I respect Dan hugely.
I've never respected Dan. Well,
to be fair, Clayton, not for anything else.
No, yeah,
but I respect Dan hugely, but I can't have what Dan has.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. I just say, "Well, fair play, Dan. Good for you." I don't and can't have that, but it doesn't matter to me. You know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where you guys
likewise,
are.
Likewise, you know, you or Clayton or you guys here, you're Chelsea fans.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Chelsea fans.
See, that's for us. And I know that when we kind of started this ridiculous idea of a podcast 5 years ago, thanks to you, Chidge.
Oh, not another one. It's my fault again.
You're responsible for a lot of the ills in this world.
I tell you what, you're like child support agency, because you'd be
fucked. Right,
a hotline?
Really, you spurred so many podcasts.
Get a hotline? I mean, for us, it's always just been about building a community in general. And I think for us, like, I don't look at you and be like, you know what? He's got 100 years on me. I'm out. I tap out. Like, what's the point in that? I just be like, it's time to start a new 100 years in that sense. Or, like, that's amazing. I think that's really cool.
It's this idea of, like, people want to establish a measuring stick to compare their quality of fandom to others and have some level of dominance over another individual.
Anatomically?
Yeah. Well, yes.
We're talking Willy Wave.
Yeah. Dropping the D on the table. It's unnecessary. It's an unnecessary level of trying to put a gate in front of just being another member of this Chelsea community. And instead of saying, hey, we want to bring you in and we want to be supportive of that and we want to help you understand what the songs are and what the culture is and what the history is and what the moments are, it pushes people away from feeling comfortable as part of that group.
But yes, because whether you're 5 years...
It is!
Whether you're 5 years or 100 years, you're still Chelsea. I mean, like you guys always say...
Yeah, start somewhere.
Like Lindsay from Detroit, you guys, can you get her a ticket? Got her a ticket, met her, seeing her face, getting Chelsea the first time, she loved it and it was great. So there's little things like that we can do, you know, a weekly basis to help people get tickets.
Right.
I don't really care.
You know, I think what underlines that, I mean, what Lieutenant Dan just said was bang on. You know, you grow up. I mean, and one has to be careful here because I've got to be honest, I get really brassed off with, you know, kind of the fundamentalist way to support Chelsea. You know, people can support the club however they want to, in my book. And somehow you suddenly get these rules of how to support the club. I would rather that was...
The proper choice.
Yeah, you know, I would rather that was put in terms of respect the culture, the traditions and the history of the club. You know, like Brandon was saying, learn the songs, understand where they come from. You know, all of that. I think that's important, but that's just a thirst for the knowledge that one has when you get into something, but also a respect for that culture. But, I mean, going back to, you know, Lieutenant Dan again, not Lieutenant Dan, other Dan.
Lieutenant Dan.
Lance Corporal Dan.
Yeah. Left ghost.
I could envy Dan because his family are far more Chelsea than I am, but I don't. I just respect it. That's the point. There will always be a hierarchy of support. I've written blogs about this, the CFC UK. There will always be somebody who's been to more games than you. There will always be somebody who's supported the club longer than you. There's always going to be that. But just respect it. Don't sit there and envy it.
And celebrate it and learn from it. You know, I mean, there's a benefit from a history perspective to understand, like, what has come previously before what's happening today and, like, how we continue to build this kind of rich community with vibrant stories.
Exactly that.
I think the irony is that, like, this is a game of fathers and sons, right? So you're taking your son, you're educating him along the way. He's obviously already quality. But then when it's another fan, so from America and, you know, a Chelsea fan who has been going for 50 years, it seems like there's a huge bridge to gap there. And it, like...
There's
a level of that that's artificial, and I think we have to look at it from the fact that online, like socially, when you think about it, either Twitter, Instagram, whatever it is, it's a really, really tiny sliver of what the reality of the situation is. You can shout into the atmosphere that, like, you hate this player, you want them out of the club, or whatever it might be, and, like, that has become potentially for some local fans or supporters, like, the identity of what a American or international supporter is, and that's not the
mate, you have people like that in the stadium. I'm not joking.
You've got, like, the live
you get plenty of dicks in the stadium. Yeah. Seriously.
But, you know, I think this is an inherently American thing. I mean, we're talking about what Dan has as a birthright as opposed to kind of the American thing. We don't believe in birthrights. Anybody who's a foreign fan, we've had to find our way to the club. Yeah. And I think there's something special in, you know, not to say that it's easy for Dan Silves because he was born into it, but if you don't have that reference and you found your way to the club and you support it in the ways that you do, you know, I think there's something really important about that. And I think at times, like, we don't celebrate that. And I think sometimes too often you see American fans who are ashamed of as to when or why they came to the club. And you shouldn't be afraid of that.
Or they're afraid to ask the crucial question because they're going to get judged.
If you're here
at some
and if
level.
You're doing it the yeah. right way, if you're a supporter, you're not a tourist or a fan, you're part of this family.
It's a huge family, whether it's going to be, you know, you're born within a mile of Stamford Bridge or you're, you know, 5,000 miles away in LA. Well, my bet you're still Chelsea. It's irrelevant.
Well, if the stadium atmosphere, which I've heard is a major complaint over the years, is not as vibrant as it could be because you get more quote unquote tourists joining.
No, I think that's it depends who they're playing.
Less cheerleaders, right?
No, it's not that either.
I mean, I'm part of my roles on the supporters trust.
It's full of old people who feel they've done their bit there.
The American fan base are by far and away the most engaged when it comes to Chelsea. Now, whether they're from, you know, the Asian market, they spend the whole time on their iPhones recording the match. You know, the Americans really buy into Chelsea so much more than any other fan group across that I've experienced across the world. You guys really get it, and I think it's, you know.
But let's put this into the context, Dan, and this is something that we have to deal with on the supporters' trust a lot. But the reality is that Chelsea has one of the oldest demographics of any Premier League club. The average age of season ticket holder is is actually younger than Jonathan. It's actually my age. It's mid-50s.
You look amazing.
That's the average demographic. The average demographic is in its mid-50s, right?
Yeah.
Secondly, over the last 20 years, because of the way that football's gone in this country, it's become a rich man's game. I mean, basically, young people and working class people have been priced out. So it's been gentrified, basically. And people who, you know, are middle class aren't going to be singing, you know, all the naughty songs or even going to know a lot of the songs.
And yet, against Man City the other day, the atmosphere was brilliant.
Febrile,
well expressed, yeah. Because it was a top game against a top club. And I'm afraid that playing against Fulham does not inspire the crowd to shout in the
same way. And we're lazy because we've had so much success.
Yeah, can I? No, it hasn't. Let me tell you a story. In 2004, we played Manchester United in the FA Cup final and we got beaten 4-0. 1994, not 2004. God, I am so old. And we were walking back to the car and we were a bit fed up. It was our first cup final for 24 years and we got stuffed.
We were poor.
And it rained.
It never, ever rains on FA Cup final day. Absolutely pouring. We were walking back to the car and we were so fed up. And we got to the car and just so happened that there were three guys, Man U fans, on the other side of the road. And one of my friends lost it and just went over and said, "What's the matter with you? You've just won the bloody double. Look at you. You're not even celebrating. You're not even happy," and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, a couple of years later, we won the cup in 97. Fantastic. Really up for it. A couple of years later, we were in the cup final again. And we turned up that day expecting to win. And we won. And afterwards... it was 3 years later. And afterwards, I wasn't anywhere near as excited as I was when we won it in 97. And we have won so much over the last 15 years that I think it's natural. It's not right. But it's natural to turn up and expect to win. Just turn up and win. And we have been, in some respects, we've been desensitized. In 2012, when we won the Champions League, part of me thought it'd be a really good idea never to go to another football game again. Because the high that I got that day.
Never be that good again.
Cheech.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chich, I'd be bereft. Inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK. And best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/ChelseaFancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Up the Chelsea!
Footballfancast.com.
Nothing's even got close to that high since then.
It's just it's just the most amazing thing. Winning the league at Bolton in 2004. I've never, ever felt anything when we've won the league again. I've never felt anything close to that.
Well, I mean,
and that is not.
I mean, I wasn't lucky enough to be at Bolton away in 2005, and I will regret that forever.
Oh,
but
I was there.
But I watched it. I watched it in a dodgy pub in Pimlico.
Yeah.
At the final whistle, my phone didn't stop ringing for the next 5 minutes, and I had all of the mates that I go to the games with who also couldn't make it there phoning me saying, "What are you doing? What are you doing? We got to go. We got to go to Chelsea now. We got to go." And we all met at Stamford Bridge, and there were 3,000 people outside the stadium in Fulham Road getting shit-faced for the next 5 hours.
Chinese restaurant,
and they closed the road. It was the most insane thing. I mean, that's what it meant to people, whether we could go or not.
Yeah, I mean, I was working that Saturday, and I remember getting home just before Lampard scored the first goal. And then about 91st minute, I phoned my dad at home. Yeah. I was on the phone to him for about 2-3 minutes of venue time talking to him. So when the final whistle went, I was on the phone to my dad.
Yeah. But you had to go there.
Oh, lovely.
You had
lovely.
To be there to commune again, going right back to where we were a minute ago.
The woman next to me said, "This is the happiest day of my life," she said, and hugged me. I'd never seen her before in my life.
Well, hugging you should always be a happy day.
Oh, thank you. But I wanted to say to her, actually, surely it isn't. Surely there must be other things, you know.
But no, I mean, but that just goes back to the atmosphere in the stadium. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are, unfortunately, an aging supporter.
Yeah, because we all started, a lot of us started in 1970, you see.
And I think, but it is interesting that the Man City game, like a week after the Fulham game, which was like a morgue,
awful.
And the Man City game was off the scale.
Yeah.
Because it was a proper game against a
fan. You can't necessarily articulate what it means. You know, if someone asked me to explain the Champions League win, what it meant, I struggled to really articulate in words what it meant. And like when I came home at 6 in the morning, woke my wife up and she goes to me, "Was it a big match?"
I mean, but like any type of sporting event like that, you know, I'm either blessed or cursed to be a Boston sports fan in addition to being a Chelsea fan. So like the first time the Red Sox. You know, won the World Series in my lifetime was incredible. Like I'll never be able to replicate that level of experience. And so you don't have a way to transmute the feeling to someone else.
If you could bottle it, you'd make millions.
Yeah, I mean, wish.
It's like for me, for example, like, on the, you know, going to I'm a Chicago Bears fan, going to Soldier Field for the first time, it's probably the same way you feel about coming to Stamford Bridge. Yeah,
I'm not sure there's a
drug that could replicate the high you got out of Munich.
No, impossible. I mean,
and Nick is not challenging anyone to recommend a drug like that. I just want to be very specific. He is not asking anyone to recommend a drug that would replicate
Raymond
my feeling.
Raymond looked into my soul and was like, "Are you sure?" I'm pretty sure.
It's in the top one of my, in my life, it's even my wedding speech. I said to, when I did my speech, "I've not been this nervous since drug was stepped up to take that
Mind you, he scored.
Yeah.
So did Dan.
But you know, going back to Munich, I mean, a very good friend of mine who I used to do a lot of work with on football programs, a big Man United fan, and to his eternal credit, actually, he phoned me up just before I left to go to Munich, because I only got a ticket at the last minute, and he said, "Mate," he said, "whatever you do, if you win," he said, "enjoy it." He said, "because you'll never be that good again." Yeah. And I thought, what the fuck are you talking about? But he was right.
Is that true? Mm-hmm.
If we won it again, it wouldn't be half as good.
I was at Amsterdam the following year for the Cup Winners' Cup.
I didn't even go.
And it was a last minute win in a cup final against Ivanovic, who still hasn't come close to that moment. Well,
but I didn't go to that because I thought there's no way. Yeah. I mean, it's a terrible thing to say because I got offered a ticket. Yeah. There's no way I could replicate what had happened 12 months earlier.
Well, I didn't go because of Rafa, obviously.
I mean, those are Munich. I mean, I was at the opposite end of the penalty you were taking. I swear that the last penalty stepped up and you saw like Neuer going to the right, penalty going to the left. And for about a second, the stadium was... You could hear a pin drop.
Dead so silent.
Quiet. Literally, that not even a second, you could hear absolute quiet and you saw the ball go in the back of the net and then it was just like...
Okay. Hands up, who cried?
I
was at a pub called Union Jacks in Columbia, Maryland, and I remember Drogba scores it, and this shirtless Englishman jumps off a pool table, and I catch him in midair. Yeah. But it was that moment that, like, you could never. I still swear, if you watch Luis's penalty,
visual,
I still think he misses it every time.
Yeah,
like,
that was.
Is it English beat?
You're just like, how did that go in? Because
Ashley Cole's penalty is the best one.
Yeah, I mean, I was with my friend, and we were. On the day trip, first flight out. So we got the 89th minute after the call. I said, "Listen, mate, if this doesn't go in, let's go because I don't want to be here at full time." So we're literally 15 seconds from leaving the stadium before that corner, and the drop was scored, and that was it.
My buddy Joe, so we were watching it, Omaha, Nebraska. That's where I'm from. No one knows where that is here. That's hilarious.
Nebraska.
It's in America.
A plus.
America.
Well done, Jason. Well done.
Yeah, yeah.
It's in the colony.
Context clues are very important here.
When did we give them back? How did that happen?
You should have won in 1812, you know.
To be fair, if you want it back, we can negotiate.
Yeah. Please take Nebraska. Can we join the colony?
Go big red. Look, I told my buddy Joe, I couldn't watch it. I couldn't watch the Chelsea penalties. It was giving me like severe anxiety. And I told Joe, if we score, tap me on the shoulder, tackle, I don't care. He full out laid me out. Laid me out on the ground. He
tap you on the shoulder.
Yeah. Like, just let me know that he scored it.
It's like a trust fall exercise, you know?
He barreled me
light
over.
As a board.
What kind of ball was this?
It was a whole thing. It was called the Fox and the Hound.
It wasn't like a special ball.
No, no.
You know, like car keys.
No.
Over there. I mean, definitely Munich is peak. For Chelsea, like you said, it is literally like the biggest underdog story ever. But as we look at Chelsea today, and you know, we are fortunate enough to come over with 20 some, you know, fans.
30
fans that said, "Hey,"
round of applause.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Absolutely.
Brilliant.
You know, for us, we've been blessed to come and see Chelsea play multiple times now. It is amazing. It is what, you know, all of these American fans should have the opportunity to do at some point if they can.
Well, and all international fans too. Like, I think we talk primarily to an American audience,
correct?
But, you know, we have engaged with people from, you know, multiple
shout out Phil
countries.
Tran, Australia.
Yeah.
We've got it's true. I think so for us. Yeah, I speak to the American audience based on where I live, but it is true for international. So, is there anything besides not handing out song sheets in the stands, besides banning us from buying half and half scarves.
We want all the songs to improve, though, because we don't think the songs are good enough, because at the moment they're not. None of the players get personal songs anymore. So, you know, most of the songs are anti-Tottenham.
So what can we do?
Brandon, I'll tell you what you can do.
Right.
You can do what we all kind of have to do. None of us... You know, are born knowing all of this. You have to take the red pill and go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
It's that simple, which means you immerse yourself in it. You find people who know more than you. You get drunk with them. You find out more. You read more books. You go to more games. You go down that rabbit hole and you just go as far as you can.
And you come find us in the pub before the match day. You know, if you want to get real authentic, come to the Cop or come to the Atlas Pre.
But you know what I mean? That's what it is.
Well, and I think to that point, though, it's the idea that we encourage and the level of inclusivity and support. You know, because I think it's very easy to say, well, because someone didn't know this or because someone didn't know this, and to make fun of it or laugh at it or like, oh, man, I can't believe you didn't know that. Like, it's about understanding.
The difficulty you have now, of course, is that everybody uses their kind of spirit guide as social media. And that's possibly the worst spirit guide you could
find. Tread carefully.
Because, you know, it's just a cesspit of judgment.
Just because they have an Eden Hazard surely, logo it is in their profile, but if you go, that does not mean that they're Eden Hazard. Hazard
team. Listen, surely, I always say, people come to me about tickets, so listen, I'll get you tickets, no problem, come to the pub, have a proper, you know, authentic Chelsea experience. Don't go to the stadium at 1:30 and pay £8
a pint. I sent Lindsay your way.
Yeah, Lindsay's great, by the way, yeah. And don't pay like £8 a pint of Singer piss, which is awful beer. Come to the pub with us, we'll look after you, you'll be welcome, because we go to a pub that is so welcome to anybody wherever you're from, and that's the way to be, to really immerse yourself.
There's another side to that. I mean, you know, you could go with Jonathan.
I was going to say, this is exactly,
you
know, what I'm
going to say. Is this an open invitation?
Go on, you tell them what I was going to say, because from you it'd be more authentic.
Well, if you come with me, you don't get experience at all. No, you just...
don't sell yourself short.
What I was going to say... You just sit on the halfway line and
he's got the best nobody does anything. It's hospitality, but what you'll find in there, you'll find people in there who have been going to see Chelsea for 40, 50 years, who know more than about this club than all of us sat here. But just because they do it differently and they don't go to the pub and they get pissed and they don't go and sing songs, it doesn't make them any less Chelsea fans. They still have the same amount of passion for it. Right?
But also they go to masses of away games as well. Mostly European, David Wilkinson.
David, you know.
He is John Cleese's agent, was John Cleese's theatrical agent. He doesn't do that, that's right. And he's been supporting them since he was a kid and he just knows everything, but he just made enough money ultimately to sit. We sit on the halfway line, what used to be the director's box. The view is fantastic. And also the information you get just watching what's going on in the dugout, which is Chidge occasionally says, what happened there? And I'll say, well, you know, he went up. I remember when Gus Hiddink fell over, got pushed over by when we drew in the Spurs game and denied them the title.
Yeah.
And it happened right down below us. And I took a little video of it and put it on social media and nobody had any idea what was going on at the time. But I think you're in a wonderful position, though, about in terms of status, because you make the journeys, and I can't believe that anybody would ever doubt your
credibility.
Your credibility, because it's phenomenal what you do.
Everybody's
coming
over
and watching and loving the team from afar is such a positive thing. It's brilliant. I mean, I'd love to like the New York Mets, you know, just because I've been to New York a couple of times, you know, and I'd like an underdog.
That's a bad idea.
I've got a hat though. I've got a hat. But you know what I mean. I just like to.
I'm just trying to save him.
I'd like to.
Baseball game was Mets with Keith Hernandez and Daryl Strawberry.
Yeah, well, you know things like that. I don't know anything about it at all. My point being that if I'd embraced that, I like cricket too much. That's my problem. So I've got too many sports, and I keep thinking, oh, I'd like to watch baseball. Oh, I'd like to get involved with it. And you think, no, don't, Jonathan. Just leave it alone. But the very fact that you're so involved in football, in soccer. And you come over from the States to watch it, I think it's unbelievably praiseworthy. I just think that is your status. You should never ever think, if anybody says, I know more about it than you do. Yeah. And because even from their armchairs or whatever, it's phenomenal. And you can then just pick it up. But you don't need to know everything. You know, I'm constantly criticising. I said all the songs. I think they're ridiculous half the time. They just, the very fact they're all singing, was it Maurizio?
He hates all the players.
I hate the players. No, I don't. Maurizio song. You know the Maurizio song? They're all going, Maurizio, Maurizio. You go, for God's sake, it's the same song as the Conte song. What's the matter with you? That's absolutely absurd. You know,
they don't want to get too attached.
They shouldn't be interchangeable. They ought to be, you know, I'm constantly criticising for that. And also the atmosphere is a completely different home and away because the supporters, you need to go away a few times if you want to pick it up. But you just support it in your own way. And I think it's wonderful what you do.
Exactly.
Wonderful.
Everybody's
guy's experience is different or unique to them. You know,
you know, I can't stand standing. I hate it. But everybody stands.
I can't stand
down.
It's because you're too old, to be fair.
No, it's not because I'm too old. It's because I've got a dodgy knee.
I really hate groupthink and this, you know, desire for, I can't even pronounce it, I've had too many beers, homogeneity.
That'll do.
I can't stand that. You know, it's probably because the way I am, I'm an individual. I do things the way I like to do them. But I respect everybody else's right to do that too. As long as you all have the same end goal, which is you support Chelsea, you want to see him win. Surely it's that simple.
That is the key point.
So the bottom line is whether you live in London, you live in America, whatever, if you're Chelsea, you've got to love you because you're Chelsea. It doesn't really matter. Exactly. It's kind of like a huge extended family.
Well, there's more that unites us than divides us, and that's the point. And I think what social media does is that it moves you away from that.
It amplifies a singular viewpoint.
It amplifies difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it helps to kind of create this divide that doesn't really exist. So when you come over here and understand what that relationship is, what that connection is, you know, I remember my first Chelsea game was going to see Maccabi Tel Aviv in the Champions League, and Clayton actually helped hook me up with a ticket, and we had lunch, you know, a meal beforehand, and it was fantastic, and you know, it was the start of a really wonderful in-person relationship with Chelsea.
And let's face it, Dan, half the players didn't go the first time we played them.
What?
I was going to sit with you.
No, he didn't sit with me.
How do we highlight the, you know, to your point, if there's more that unites us than divides us, how do we highlight the stuff that unites us more?
Well, we're here
yeah,
for a start.
We're here and just
here. Like, applause for our audience.
I don't think.
It's going to be hell to edit for our editor, so apologies.
Good. Is there anything else we could do to make it
like a lot of fucks.
Shall I shout the word sausage out for no apparent reason?
Yeah, do that.
For the next few minutes.
Yeah.
Okay? No, Jake has got this under control. He is an absolute pro.
Sausage.
If you talk backwards, that's impossible to edit. Nick, your point, you know, How can you get away from that? Well, I think if you exist in the bubble of social media, you can't, because that's what social media does. As I just said, it's there to amplify difference, and then it all goes crazy. It's like somebody's chucked some acid in a vat, and you have to dive headfirst into it. But I think if you come out into the real world, then actually you find far more, you know, similarities.
Sanity.
You find more commonality with people.
If you take social media with a massive pinch of salt.
If you go to the pub, for example, rather than Twitter.
Yeah.
Right.
If you look at Twitter and that's how you looked at Chelsea, you'd be mad.
Yeah.
Just take anything you see on Twitter with a massive pinch of salt. All the fan accounts.
We need to play all the youth. We need to sell all the youth. We need to hire this manager. We need to fire this manager. We need to.
But the thing is about Twitter. No. Twitter is like, you know, a mass expulsion of everybody's inner dialogue. Yeah. And there's a reason why we call it inner dialogue. It shouldn't really come out. You know, and that's what happens. But I think in the pubs, as we were just about to say, it's you know, you have to try and find common ground with people. You kind of want to get on with people. Can you imagine what the pub would be like if it was like Twitter?
Yeah.
It'd be a brawl. Yeah, absolute brawl.
Like genocide.
Yeah. It couldn't be a brawl because you wouldn't be able to look at anybody.
No, I would be blocking everybody. I'd be looking at the bartender.
It'd just be like that.
Can I just say the one thing about social media? Is it without it, none of us would be here.
That's very true.
It's how you are as a person. I mean, I basically follow people of a like mind, and I don't get into a lot of the rubbish that other people get into. Now, I'm not saying I'm perfect, and I know I'm not.
You are perfect.
You're perfect.
I just want to have that on record. Thank you very much.
I'll
second that.
But social media is extremely divisive.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is that you've got to pick who you follow. You'd have to agree with everybody, but you shouldn't bite every time somebody says something stupid. There's a particular person, I think we all know who he is, who basically rants into a phone for 90 seconds talking absolute and utter garbage, who I blocked months ago because I found him completely offensive, divisive.
And he's here and tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome.
I really wish he was, because I've got a few things that I'd like to give him. But the point is, it's a glue, the social media, in some respects, and then it's very divisive, and you've got to be in control of that.
Well, and you know, to that point, our podcast would have never started without Twitter.
Yeah,
exactly, you know? Right. Brandon sends out the message. Nick,
well, hello.
And
I mean, basically,
I know him through Twitter.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I know you through Twitter.
But I thought you were my friend.
It's expectations, right? Yeah. Any of our Twitter,
at times people have forgotten that we have this expectation that we're going to beat any team below us, and then if we're playing a team above us, we're going to beat them too. It's a game, and I feel like we get away from the idea of if you've played the game, there are times where you play poorly, and it's a bad performance,
but you need to
check out and just let it be. It's a bad match.
When I first started doing the podcast, I had this hilarious bloke. Some of you may remember if you were listening to it back then, but a guy called Chel Tell, who became something of a peculiar legend while we were doing the show. he's got about 5 years on me. I think he's nearly 60 now. If we lost a game of football, he wouldn't talk to anybody for a week. He would sulk. I remember
next Saturday.
I had him lined up to do a podcast in the days that we would do that. I think we would wait a day before we recorded because we were too pissed to do it after the match. So, and I had to spend half an hour on the phone to persuade him to come in and do a show because he could not and would not accept that Chelsea could lose a match. This is a grown man, older than me, who'd been supporting them since he was five. So, you know, it takes all sorts, basically.
But I can honestly say that when we lose a game of football, I feel as crappy as when I had to go into school on the Monday following a game that we'd lost. It just ruins everything for me.
That's what football does to you. It kind of has such an impact on your life. I mean, there's times like when we lost to Spurs last season. Fuming. I'd never been so upset, angry, all the emotions you can imagine. And I had to go to my mum's for dinner. I was like, oh my God,
It's identity. Yeah, you know, Chelsea's a part of our identity, and we associate so much emotion with what happens on the field and what happens with the club. And I think it's very easy to get caught up in the fact and start to not be able to disassociate like yourself from the sport and to take a moment to say, the fact that we lost is absolutely shitty and terrible, but you know what? That should not... It's going to ruin part of my weekend, but I shouldn't let it ruin all of my weekend. I should be like a terrible spouse or a terrible friend for 2 days.
The reason we don't record right after matches is that.
Yeah.
Your perspective the day after versus an hour after.
Yeah. Or a minute after or 5 minutes after.
Well,
or
140 seconds after.
Unless we've won.
Yeah, but we used to do that.
That's right. I never yell.
Nick, we used to do that. And it was hilarious because we would be utterly raw emotionally, whether we'd lost or won, obviously in different directions, but and the whole damn show was just insane. But what would happen, and I think this is why, in a sense, it kick-started whatever it was we did and why ever it became popular, but you know, what we did, we laid bare what everybody else was going through at the same time, and it was an emotional roller coaster. If we'd lost, we'd be ranting, we would be depressed, we would be drunk, but by the end of 2 hours, we're all mates and having a laugh.
You would be drunk.
We went through that. No, we were all drunk. They were worse than me. Yeah, but you know, we would go through that roller coaster of emotions, and we would come out the other side. So it became a kind of a really weird cathartic experience for us doing it, and also for people who listen to it. It's bizarre.
It's the kind of thing. It becomes completely out of character for a lot of people. Yeah. I mean, you know, well, I'm not a Chelsea, I'm generally quite well mannered. Don't swear much. And I'm quite a normal person.
Football, mate.
No, not outside of Chelsea, I'm quite normal, quite well mannered. I mean, I remember what's now my wife, I took her to a Chelsea match about 5 months into our relationship, and I was pretty calm. We were playing Spurs, that was it, Spurs in the League Cup final, which we lost, and my friend couldn't make it.
You took your wife to a Spurs
game? Well, Chelsea Spurs in the Cup final, and we began about
5 months.
We
were supposed to win
months.
It, weren't we?
My friend couldn't make it, said, do you want to come to Chelsea? And she went, yeah, do you think I'll see Cheryl Cole? I'm like, probably not, but come anyway. Yeah. So anyway, we lost 2-1, about 5 minutes to go, I was getting fuming. I was swearing. I was slating Tom Hollister. She went to me, oh, you do swear then?
Yeah, I mean...
It's not...
My girlfriend wooed me by coming along to the Arsenal-Chelsea League Cup final in Cardiff, saying, oh, I quite like football. I'll come and watch it with you. The only game she's ever seen. Has no interest in it at all.
Yeah, I would definitely have... Our Saturday mornings get off to an interesting start sometimes, depending on the Chelsea result, Morgan.
What you don't know is Brandon's girlfriend is in the audience.
Just I can't
as he says
hide
this.
Behind
she
that.
She said nothing. Morgan, come.
Red as a Manchester United kid
she's
right
as
now.
Red as a tomato right now.
Look, hey.
Well, my wife tells me that she can tell whether Chelsea have won or lost
We live in a basement flat in Pimlico, and I have to go down these stairs to get to the front door. And she says she can tell whether we've won or lost by how I walk down the stairs.
And the colour of your plums.
That has nothing to do with the football, though. Or whether we've won or lost.
So I guess I kind of want to just put a nice little bow on it and one and just be, you know, the fact is, no matter who you are, no matter where you are, like, there are amazing highs of being a Chelsea fan. We are so blessed that there's Chelsea content. It is accessible everywhere today.
And it's become more so, won't it, do you think? Mm. Do you think there'll eventually be, when technology advances, it'll be, you know, 3D in your front
sitting
room.
In the stand. Yeah,
you'll be sitting there. You'll be sitting on the pitch.
Shed lower.
You'll be playing with the players.
You know, the VR that you can use behind the goal as you watch the match from home.
Yeah. Look, the Super Bowl did it. This last Super Bowl did it. But, it's a potential. The other thing is, no matter if you're going to home matches, away matches, if you're, you know, whatever, there is also, you know, challenges and hurdles to get over, just like everyone. And to me, I guess my biggest takeaway from all of this is it just depends on your approach. If you go to someone, whether it's online or in person, with a point to prove, it will never end well. But if you go there, I've actually been on Clayton's timeline, actually somewhat recently, and I was asking about, there's a discussion kind of about a specific player, and I think we're actually about the front three. And I was like, there's a lot of good movement and passing and interchanging, and someone else jumped in who I know, and they're like, but there was no end product. And we had a discussion, but the difference was I wasn't there. I'm interested in hearing that other perspective so I can form my own. There's just a difference, I think. And it all comes to everyone's approach and demeanor, and obviously social media. You can throw up a random avatar, like you said, and hide behind it if you want. But we have been very big ourselves, and why we love the fan cast and the other members kind of on the fringes of that. Because we can come together, and we've been welcomed, and we said, we've raised our hand and said, hey, we love this team.
We
want to be a
don't know.
We want to be a part of the community.
Yeah. And as Chidge pointed out when we were kind of planning this podcast and we were kind of talking about the topics, you know, he talked about the two words, which I think are the most important key message that we
beer
can
leave. Beer.
Beer and beer. Yes, that's a good two. Those were not the first two you mentioned. Was mutual respect.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. The mutual respect between the international supporter and the local supporter for the plights that we have, for the highs that we have, and understanding that everyone comes to this
there's
game.
There's no reason not to be like that.
Right. That's what I said at the beginning. Your family. Your Chelsea family.
That's what I said. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Really just don't understand
just like
anybody who has got an opinion that says, well, you don't go, so you don't care. You know, you can't know what it's like. I just don't get it. It's you've got to respect everybody.
And it's continuing to
you
preach
really have,
the idea
apart from
of
the
that
guy
respect.
Who does the 90-second
It's continuing to preach the idea of that respect so that we can continue to erode whatever divide may or may not exist and continue to build a stronger coalition of supporters as, you know, Chelsea grow as a, you know.
Don't let anyone ruin Chelsea for you.
Yeah.
Like, fuck that.
Yeah, but you know, it's also that experience of watching from the matches. And I think sometimes there's a discredit to instant replay and some of the TV angles in which when you're at the pitch and you're looking from a different angle, what looks like the defender's right on somebody, it might be 10 yards. There's a different angles. And, you know, unless you've really played the game or you're really looking from an overhead view or a different angle, sometimes it really looks like those players should have been there when they aren't
but
that
if,
close.
If you've been at the match, I mean, as Jonathan will chuckle when I say this, but you know, we go on all the time. Your timing is woeful.
Terrible. I was doing it before.
Yeah. You do ignore set up daily, but you know, when we're at the match live, we get one chance to see whatever happens.
And from one angle.
Yeah. From one angle. Yeah. Mm. So yeah, whilst we can sit here and say, well, we see the whole pitch and the whole game, which to an extent we do. We only ever see it happen once. So if you're watching it on TV, you get 14 different replays from every bloody angle.
In slow motion.
So you probably have a much better idea. I mean, the number of times I've gone home and said, what happened with that? Who scored, you know? It happens every week, you know? So you can't even use that as an argument to beat people up with.
If you were going to start the conversation, like, you're in the stadium and I'm watching it on TV, this is what I saw.
Mm.
Tell me exactly what you saw. And I have four different replays, and NBC Sports in America does a phenomenal job of covering the matches. They basically have every angle you could ever want.
Just watching on mute.
No. Morata surprisingly was offside there.
No, but that one we can always guarantee.
Yeah, we got that. Yeah.
Can you place a bet on that one?
Yeah, right.
Number of offsides?
No, they're not taking bets anymore.
At least we're able to start the conversation. A lot of people go into it saying, what I saw is the word. Mm. Like, there is no other way around
exactly.
it.
Exactly. It's too black and
white. And then two people are going at it with yeah. saying, like, well, no, actually.
They're terrible. Sell them.
We have 50 replays showing the other thing. Like, come on, man. Like.
You know, the other thing that I would say about support generally, you know, we're all, you know, me, Clayton, and Jonathan are in our 50s, Dan's only a little bit younger. We will go in the next 20 years or so. None of us will probably be going there anymore, and there'll be a whole new tranche of supporters that are going on. So that we can't sit here and say, well, that's the only way to support the club, because in a few years we'll be gone anyway. So the new people that come in, they will be supporting the club the way they want to. And then in 40 years' time, they'll be gone, and then the next tranche will come on. And I mean, people who are going in the 50s probably look at us and saying, what a bunch of idiots, the way that they support the club. People who are going in the 30s will probably say the same, and so on. It always changes.
Except we're more knowledgeable than they were in that period.
Well, you only know that because you were there then.
And also we've got more available to us, you know, with facts.
Yeah, facts, yeah, yeah, yeah.
All the kind of new...
Mostly
new,
via Twitter.
Well, new stuff like, you know, XG, expected goals, which is a load of bullshit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's still about goals with matches, XG.
Expected goals.
I hate that. Expected goals, what? Expect to win.
Yeah, damn fight, you
know,
go.
But Dan, put it around another way. You know, there was no kind of singing like we know it now. In the 50s.
If you started singing, somebody would go, you just shut up there in the front row.
Shut
up! Trying to watch the game!
So things do change and they evolve and it's all different and I think it's a generational thing.
There's a lot of, you know, with the invention of Sky and all the money's coming, there's been a lot of very good things that have come into football, but also conversely, a lot of bad things as well.
Well, my only hope is that in 5-10 years' time that, you know, kids will actually be able to afford to go. If we can't do anything about that, the game's dead in my book.
The thing is, though, if you look at Sky, if, for example, they don't meet the right deal, then you've got Amazon or Netflix or pick up. You know, so the money is going to continue to go into the game because there'll be huge companies like Amazon, Netflix who can afford to pay billions of pounds to stream matches because they, you know.
But this is the fundamental issue, isn't it, in football? Is that, you know, can football now exist without television money? And I think I use the word television very broadly, so I include the FANG companies as well. Can the game exist with that? Because actually it should do. Because the game has always been very simple. It's about 22 players kicking a ball around on a pitch and, you know, anywhere between a few hundred and a few thousand people watching it. If it can't exist on that model anymore, it is truly fucked.
The pure, you know, sort of skeleton of football is, as you say, 22 players, but, you know, will it exist without the, you know, 200,000 pound contracts?
That's my point.
That's the issue.
You know,
will it? But then it existed up until 1994, pre-Sky, and it could potentially exist beyond that.
Well, that's the issue, isn't it?
I was reading Kelvin Barker's book about, you know, the Chelsea in the 80s, and the contract, even players, they're earning £600-800 a week even then. So obviously, relative increases over the years. Mm. But, you know, listen, the bubble won't burst because there'll always be somebody else to pick up the slack.
Because it's shown all over the world, and the advertising revenue is so enormous.
I think if Sky lose their monopoly, I think we will start to seeing, you know, like the NFL move games to the UK. I think
I'm convinced that will happen. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, the NFL. If I was an NFL fan, eight home games a season. If you lose one home game, that's shit.
I think we would universally say that we would never want to see a Premier League game played outside of the UK in the US audience. Like, that's awful.
But why? The NFL come, you know, no one's complaining when the NFL comes the other way. Yeah, but I don't think it would hurt it.
No, the thing is, there's a difference. Like, I kind of think you guys
are
match going with American fans versus kind of guys that, you know, will perhaps have support three teams in, you know, they're like City, Chelsea, Spurs. You guys are what I call match-going American fans, and you don't want it because you understand what football's about, the roots, the history, the culture, and to take a game to America will completely and utterly destroy the game. NFL is very different because a lot of you guys are franchises, so you happily move a team from east to west coast or wherever it might be. So it's quite a different.
Well, teams move cities. Like teams have left their fan bases and said, "See you later. I'm going to go to the city with a better deal."
Like three times in 10
but
years.
Do we think the overall issue? Could we solve the tourist/supporter issue to make something that's more cost-effective for local real supporters and then tourists by increasing the size of stadiums? If we had a 60,000
capacity stadium for Chelsea, then who would care about tourists being there? If you could, have a decent price for local fans, so that you could still have the atmosphere, because that's what we have in the U.S. We don't have the issue in which I feel like we're very much arguing over. There's only 40,000 people can be there, so if any tourists are coming, it's taken away from, you know, real born and bred local supporters. Can you solve that by saying, you know what, if you're a tourist, go to the upper part. Let us have our team.
The new stadium only have, I think, is it 5,500 new season ticket holders?
Yeah, the rest goes to corporate hospitality.
Okay, look at me. I love NFL, so I went to. I've seen the Redskins. I've seen the Giants.
I'm sorry about the Redskins.
I went to see.
My wife is a Redskins supporter, and she's
they got beat by
really
Seattle.
Bad.
But I go and I picked up a ticket really easily, and I don't think about the impact it might have. The fact it's on StubHub means that somebody is selling their ticket because they don't want to go or they can't go.
Right.
So that's my issue, you know. And the NFL coming here, because I don't have the same passion for NFL as I do for Chelsea,
right.
It doesn't really have an impact on me, because I think, okay, great, I'm going to watch a game at Wembley to see the NFL. But
you know, the MLS is a good example in which, in Seattle, right, the average attendance is 40,000. But they have a stadium of 70,000. So when people aren't, when they're not selling at the 40,000, they have the upper area, they have tarps that cover it, so it looks fine. But for big matches, they have the ability to increase that size. And I think that there's something that could be said that if you could create more standing room sections, or there are ways to deal with the, you know, the stadium and the fans, and still allowed for both to coexist. Allow the tourists to come, but allow the people who live there to also
attend. It's the approach.
Do you think that, like, if you look at, like, football's quite tribal in the UK,
right?
And you kind of look like your average Chelsea fan versus your average, I don't know, Seattle fan in NFL. Would you say there's a difference in them? I mean, I kind of think, because Seattle, quite conceivably, that wouldn't happen, could move to St. Louis, for sake of argument, because they could change. It wouldn't happen, but they could move the franchise.
Possible.
Do you find that American sports fans, per se, your major sports, are quite different to a football fan in the UK? So you've got your NFL, your...
Yes.
I mean, Seattle lost to Supersonics, and it's been a wound that's never been healed. So I think...
There's two main reasons of we don't have the roots that it exists here. And it's a franchise model.
Yeah.
This isn't like a community built it. It's owners, which is a one-off. I think they're very different models. Like, I think that's a big difference. Like, you can kind of choose who you support, because the NFL and NBA and baseball only have franchises in certain cities, and the ones they can make the most money, whereas football is in the UK and Europe is very much more grassroots and is built up over 100 years. So I think that there are big differences. I personally love English and European football 1,000 times more because of that. It's more organic, but that is something that is incredibly hard to repeat kind of our end. So anyways, thank everyone. This could go on forever. 100%. This will go on.
But we need to go drink more beers.
And that is it.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at. So our friends that are here again, thank you for hanging out with us. We appreciate you guys being here.
Also, a big thank you to the Classic Football Shirts team. Also for staying late, keeping it open, supplying the beer.
And obviously a huge shout out to the FanCast friends as well. Thank you so much for welcoming us. Hey, until next time, Chelsea fans, you know what to do. Keep the blue flag flying high.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.